Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And there's nothing wrong with leading, right? I mean, that's what America needs a little more of. At least that's this host's humble opinion. And so what did you think? Any comments? Now, I know, and so I've been really, really negligent in moving forward. I've just been really, really busy with the show content and regular life and so forth. And Red State Talk Radio has told me to move off of our current phone system, just due to phone quality and those types of things. And I have just not done that. And so I have been told that those who have tried to call have had some people have had success connecting, and then some people haven't. So don't hate me because I have not moved over to the new phone system, but I will, and I promise you I will get that done. But if you want to call in, give it a try. The number to call in is 215-867-8255 for today, or 215-TOP-TALK. You are listening to the only show that will provide you the insights necessary in getting the federal government and actually state governments into compliance. Got to remember, constitutions are contracts. They're more than just a social contract. In the old days, a social contract was a very big thing, but today social contracts are really marginalized. But nevertheless, these are hard, fast contracts, which means that we can hold, as stakeholders of the contract, we can hold people accountable to the contract. And so that's what auditing is all about. You want to scare somebody that's got a contract with the government? Tell them you're going to audit them. You will get that panic look in their eyes like a deer caught in the headlights, right? Now, I haven't forgotten, but I did want to share with you that this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. I also want to just really quickly skim past the groveling, because I do know that everybody is busy, but we need your help. I've been going for a year now, been on Red State Talk Radio for a little over a year, and I think for almost the whole entire year, I've kind of put it out there that I do need your help, that I cannot do this alone. Washington could not fight the revolution by himself. He did require a little support. It really wasn't a lot of support in magnitude of the amount of people that contributed and got involved compared to all of the people that just ignored the revolution and what, you know, que sera, sera, what will be, will be. Anywho, there's an old Doris Day song. Anyway, and I don't mean to be dating myself, but anyway, the fact is that if you do want to help, send me an email, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. If you want to get more involved and start sending emails and leading and actually working with others in your county and state, join the Constitution Club and Keith Broders and Mort and all of those who are a part of that organization. And you can actually, you know, be a part of the wave of emails that are hitting the state legislators at this point in time. Get involved. So go to constitutionclub.ning.com. And that would be one way, by joining and identifying what state, county you live in. And then you can actually find other people that are in your county and state as well and start working with them and become a leader. Now is the time for leaders to stand up for the good people, as Edmund Burke says, to stand up and oppose evil, because the only thing that evil needs to succeed is for good people to do nothing. I've changed that for men, but anyway, and I've explained that. I do want to thank you for tuning in, and I thank you for those of you who have gotten involved. We need a lot more. Believe me, we do not have enough. We need a lot involved. Oh, I forgot to say, if you want to financially contribute, it would be gratefully appreciated. Again, we are a nonprofit. We're not a nonprofit organization, because I do not want to be libeled and or pursued and or crushed by the jackbooted thugs and regulations that go along with that. I do not take a salary, and really nobody is in the organization takes a salary. I do pay people for services, and we come up with mechanisms to do that. But, you know, if you compared my organization to almost all nonprofits, we are far more focused. The only money that goes out that is not towards the efforts and or the services and goods and stuff that, you know, we really need is the money that goes out to the IRS. And at this point in time, I'm not making that much money via this mechanism. And the intent is not to do that. The intent is to just make enough to cover our travel and everything else. Because as I have told you, once we get one state started, you know, my needs for the money to come into my travel will probably go down. And in some respects, some states should probably be covering my travel costs or what have you once we get a couple of states standing up. It only takes one David to start sending the charge of courage throughout the other good red patriotic states. As I've told you, if you live in a blue state, you have more vested in helping these red states stand up than you can realize, because you probably already recognize the fact that your state, even though you thought it was red or it was purple and now it's blue, there is no helping you because they have successfully infiltrated your election system and everything else that you're not going to be able to turn that state red again. The only saving grace are the red states to stand up and actually demand compliance to the Constitution and getting them to do that. We're going to be doing a video of this, but currently I only need 27 states to ram compliance down the federal government's throat to where they have no other recourse but to comply. And I can get into that, and I will in the videos, but I am just here to tell you that we don't need necessarily a 3/4 majority to demand compliance to our current contract, our Constitution. But I've gone down an aside, and that wasn't my intent. I just wanted to thank you for listening and thank you for tuning in, thanking you for getting involved, because that's one way of getting more people to listen and become involved. So please, by all means, share the idea, the thought that, wow, there's actually a radio show that is providing people a real tangible solution that they could sink their teeth into. Challenge it. Don't just take my word for it. Go out there, read these documents, and then come back and say, where did this come from? And I'll be happy to answer those questions because they've already been answered. And you will walk away with what everybody that has challenged this, the only reason people walk away without getting on board with this is because they have self-interest, and I'm going to get into that at the very end of the show if I have time. But I also have to tell you that I did check the news, and there is no sign. There is no sign that the federal government is going to disband any role, responsibility, or power that is a violation of the Constitution. And I will tell you, over 80% of the things that they are doing are violations of the Constitution. It's kind of bold for me to say that, but I can prove it. And I have been proving it on this show. If you listen to my podcast, I actually read the founding documents that clearly delineate the legal definitions of the Constitution. And these are legal definitions that lawyers and jurists and those that are part of this huge living document facade do not want you to know. So, your State of the Union assessment, what is it? Do you want to call in? Give it a try. And if you don't, send me an email and I will read your assessments. That might be a good way too, because I know people really, it's really hard for people to, you know, get the courage to call and to actually have a conversation. That I get it, especially if you don't feel really, and believe me, I don't want to talk about my assessment, at least not up front, because I know when I do start talking about my assessment, some people think, well, man, I'm anti-Trump and anti-good and those types of things. And I don't want that to happen because I'm not anti-Trump and I'm not anti-good, but I will explain what I am about. And I haven't done this in a long time, so I will do that again. But I do want to hear from you. And so if you want to call in or send me an email, again, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And so I believe that most Americans should have something to say, especially based on my watching, and I watched it twice, the State of the Union. I don't know if you watched it twice, but you probably listened to a lot of hyperbole from a lot of different commentators from the left, right, and supposedly, air quotes, objective journalist. As if there's such a thing, right? We've become so ideologically wired today that it's just impossible. And that's why I keep on saying we have to acknowledge the fact that there's nobody that can be absolutely objective. We always have some level of biases, regardless of, you know, where we've come from and how well we've trained ourselves. And so with that, especially with the majority of the people, they are just hard biased. And so we need to start changing how we have government services and so forth, like the post office and all of these types of places that have federal government employee unions, DMV and so forth. We need to make sure that we have equally represented ideologies. It has nothing to do with demographics, but it has everything to do with ideologies, because, you know, if half the people in that office, the person next to you, does not ideologically think the way you do, then if you're going to try to cheat, scam the system, or do something, they'll probably blow the whistle on you because they know what you're doing is wrong. Whether that be Republican wrong, Democrat wrong, it doesn't matter. And the division there is really, really important to recognize. Well, while I give you a chance to call in, let me share some things with you that I have not shared in a long time. And when we come back, I will begin sharing those things. So please stay tuned, and we'll be right back after these promos. Thank you so much. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcasts and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in, and let's get on with the dialogue. So as a point in fact, it was about the beginning of my broadcasting on Red State Talk Radio, I kind of went over some of my fundamental premises. And these things are literally the three fundamental premises that I espouse. And so I thought that while, you know, I gave you some time to ruminate on what you'd want to say about the State of the Union, because there's been lots of people saying things, and I've already gotten some feedback. As a matter of fact, an old childhood friend who I'm doing some work with, and he's in a rock band, and they're going to be doing some interesting things, and I hope to help, you know, collaborate with them on doing some real things, because I'll get into it later. I don't want to spill the beans now, but I heard from him, and he said the best State of the Union ever. And so what's your take on it? Give me just a quick blurb if you want to send me the email. Again, it's info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And I will, you know, if you want to withhold your name, or it doesn't matter. Tell me what you want. I will convey it if you can't get through, or if you don't want to call. Either way, I'm more interested in your perspective of the State of the Union. We've heard lots of people pontificate, you know, outcomes and so forth. We've seen polls. What is your take? What is the Red State Talk Radio listener to the Reclaiming the Republic show? What's your take? Give it to me. Okay. And so, excuse me, let me move forward then on my three premises that I kind of talked about before. And I want to share this to you so you can, I shared this, like I said, a year ago, so that you understood the whole context of the show and the direction I'm taking this and why I want to take it in this direction. My first premise, and I learned this from Stan Hopper, a guy I really respected. I still do. I think the world of him. He was my chief engineer at the time. And at that point in time, he was living on the premise that reasonable people, equally informed, seldom disagree. He learned this from his professor. He asked his professor where that came from to cite it, and he didn't know. And I really have never been able to cite it, so I cite him. And leave his professor, who I don't know, anonymous. But anywho, I want to talk about that real quick here. Reasonable people, because I truly believe, having lived three separate lives, living the life in the indoctrination system, going from age 0 to 20, I was literally being indoctrinated into collectivism and the communist perspective from this education system, from the popular music, the culture at the time. There's no doubt. And I mean, it's even worse today. It's absolutely worse today. The kids are completely being steeped in communism today. But having said that, that was my first life. Then my second life was living in the military for 20 years in the Marine Corps. And then my third life was working in the civilian world as a contractor within the intelligence community for government contracting. And so there may not have been much of a difference from one to the other, but I'm telling you, there's a huge difference when you're wearing the uniform and when you're not. And I've told people, and this really upsets them, that there is no other form, a perfect form of communism than the U.S. military, because it is 100% voluntary at this point in time. You can always walk away from it. But when you joined, at least at that point in time, you had no control. It was for the good of the state, or for the good of the military, for the good of the Corps. You went here. It didn't matter if your kids, you know, had really important things about, you know, whether it be medical. I mean, you could get medical considerations for not being moved, but 9 times out of 10, I mean, that was up to somebody that, you know, if they didn't like you, next thing you know, your butt was moving. So that's how it was, because you were literally subjected to the state, or I should say the military at that point. But it's the same concept. Anyway, reasonable people, I truly believe in all of these walks of life, most everybody I've dealt with, regardless of their demographics, are really reasonable people. The real problem is that middle part, equally informed. There's so few of us that have the same base in knowledge other than the indoctrination crap that we found out is probably literally just more crap than anything else. And so the difference between us and the framers back way back in the 1700s, late 1700s, when they were framing this nation, All of those men had read practically the same books. They'd read Plato's Republic, Aristotle's Politics, Cicero. They've read all of the great works. They even read some of the new stuff because they didn't have an abundance in, you know, the internet and access to all sorts of things. If it wasn't in the library and it wasn't in physical print in their hands, they hadn't read it. They may have heard of things. Some things may have been passed down by word of mouth, but most things were, as far as knowledge goes, was really limited to what they had. And that's why they were all equally informed. So that's why they were able to come to an agreement very quickly. You have no idea what a mountain we have to climb to get people to that equal informed. But I'm here to tell you, it's not that big of a mountain, because this isn't rocket science. This isn't teaching people quantum physics. This is not something that is so outside of our grasp that we could, you know, quickly immerse ourselves and get this. It is as simple as understanding liberty. And surprisingly, most people don't understand that. But the third part of that statement, reasonable people equally informed seldom disagree. And so just like the framers, that's why they could come to an acquiescence, so they could agree so quickly in moving forward. Now, there were lots of things that were heavily debated, like the process of choosing president. I think they voted well over 60 times in the Constitutional Convention to nail down that process, because they wanted to make sure that we did not have a direct democracy, that we had a representative government. That's why we elected electors to represent us. And these people were the people that we're supposed to know, because this is an important position. It's the leader of the federal or the general government. And we just don't want ignorant people being able to vote directly for the person that's promising them the most. The brilliance in the Electoral College literally eludes the majority of people today, especially those who are empowered and on the activist mode of trying to get rid of it. They have no clue. Most of them probably don't, but there are those who are a part of this that absolutely have the nefarious intent of knowing exactly what they're doing, because they will destroy the protections that were baked into our constitutional republic to keep us from hanging ourselves by electing a despot and or a tyrant. Now, we've had plenty of despots and tyrants, but it's going to get worse as we start setting aside the Constitution more and more. So let me move on. My second premise is more of a common knowledge premise. I mean, who hasn't heard the old premise, knowledge is power? Well, knowledge is absolutely nothing unless applied. Once it's applied, it becomes power. And so knowledge is very important, but it is absolutely germane. It is absolutely ineffective unless it's being applied. Now, I believe that most people do apply knowledge in their everyday lives, but applying knowledge in the activist mode, or getting into the grassroots and getting involved in using that knowledge in, you know, helping other people understand and sharing knowledge, that is where knowledge can become infectious. And we want knowledge and power to become infectious. But it is a common knowledge thing that most people understand, that knowledge is power. And so the third part, which was common knowledge way back when, but I hate to say this, it has been one of those things that has been truly lost. But I believe this really brings the whole thing home. And so some of you may go, what? Madison actually said this, and many of the framers said this: people are the fountain of political power. Now, what does this have to do with how these things all work together? Remember, reasonable people equally informed. So if I'm sitting here and I'm equally informing you, then I'm giving you knowledge, which means that in essence, I'm giving you an opportunity to apply power. People are the fountain of political power. If we get to a point where we all agree that we must demand that our Constitution, which was literally and divinely inspired to protect us from ourselves and to protect us from bad players within government, regardless of some of the worst compromise during the Constitutional Convention, which I've talked about on and on and on, was the maintenance of slavery. I mean, this was a huge issue. Three states held the entire Constitution hostage by demanding, and it was the two Carolinas and Georgia, that they demanded that they be able to maintain slavery. And I have been on the record to say that was the worst political compromise they ever made. They should have told them to go packing. We're moving forward based on our founding principles that all men were created equal. That would have cleaned the slate. America would be in such a different position today. We would have had to fight that Civil War. Who knows? Who knows where we would have been, but apparently we weren't smart enough, or that those men didn't have the faith and courage to stand up to those three little states and say, go ahead, pack your bags, we can do this without you. And oh, good luck with Spain. And I've said this before, so when I come back, I'll bring this all home and bring this back together for you. So again, please stay tuned, and I'm going to tell you how we're empowering you. And we'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open. So pulling this all together, let me kind of explain to you why government doesn't work, why our Republican form of government has been failing us. And that's because we are not concise and succinct in our message to our representatives. Remember that saying, people are the fountain of political power. Well, if everybody around has their own little pet peeve, abortion, labor, immigration, healthcare, Obamacare, it can go on and on. The IRS stifling, you know, a conservative speech. There are all sorts of pet peeves out there. Fact of the matter is that if everybody is really looking at the macro view, where, if you've listened to this show, I've provided you all the academic evidence that the federal government has no jurisdiction over any of those things.
The framers, during the ratification debates, clearly stated the jurisdiction was strictly limited to the enumerated powers, that the Supreme Court had no ability to pull things in that they had no jurisdiction on. It was their job to identify that they didn't have jurisdiction and to call the laws null and void. That's John Marshall's verbiage during the Virginia ratification debates. Why are the ratification debates? For those who haven't heard this before, if you understand the fact that the Constitution's a contract, it is a hard, fast contract. When they were discussing, debating, and negotiating what this contract meant before they would actually empower it or accept it in the ratification process, then those definitions provided, and I'm using the quotes here, that convinced the people of the state, those delegates that were elected to represent the state that ratified that constitution, all of those definitions are legally binding. If you understand the fundamentals of contract law, those things that were used to help sell the contract, to help convince the person that this is what this contract is going to do, that is a legally binding definition in that contract. Now, nobody wants you to know this because they want you to think that, oh, this is just a noble guide of governance. No, all the framers called the Constitution a contract. So let me get back to, in context, to the people are the fountain of political power. If we all put this into context, that the fact is that the Constitution, whether it be your state or whether it be the federal Constitution, these are contracts, or in the federal level, it is a compact because there are multiple parties. To date, there are 50 parties to this contract. Who are the founders of the contract? The founders are not men. They were the states, because they were the ones that had to buy in. And this is just fundamental contract law. Those people who bought into are the founders of. Just like a corporation, if I buy into and create this entrepreneurial idea and I'm successful, I'm the founder of it. I'm the one that is the owner of it. Now, when I die, it goes into an estate. But states are perpetual. That was the brilliance of how this whole thing was set up, because the states should be valiantly guarding and protecting and preserving their contract. But anyway, back to this whole thing on the people are the fountain of political power. Fact of the matter is that if we give up our little pet peeves, you know, some people say, well, God won't forgive me if I give up on abortion. But what if you actually stepped up into a higher level of going after abortion and said, we demand that you comply to the Constitution? If everybody gave up their pet peeve, because everything that your pet peeve is the results of noncompliance of the Constitution. Just think, we could get everybody succinct. We could get everybody concise with the very same message, And that message is compliance. Compliance. Say it with me. Compliance. We demand full compliance to our Constitution. In doing that, that removes the federal government out of jurisdiction to your pet peeve, and it moves it out of their ambiguous power and back to a tangible power where you, the people of your state, can take control. Now, you may be living in a blue state that says, we love abortion. Then vote with your feet, move to a state that doesn't, and or stand there and fight with, you know, with the rest of the good people in your state to change the paradigm. Most people have kind of abandoned this whole concept of abortion. It is no longer a majority of the people that are in support of it, especially with infanticide. But my point is, people are the fountain of political power, and the reason why our representatives are off chasing all these different things and doing all sorts of crazy crap is because we're not demanding that they hold, you know, they be compliant and they hold the rest of government into compliance. If we were very succinct and concise in our message that we demand that they be compliant. This, we're going to send you into the legislature, and we want you to be compliant. Then when everybody sees that that legislator is not compliant, then you say, we're voting you out. Well, I was doing all these things. Well, no. The one thing that we told you to do. So, but see, if everybody has their own little pet peeves, then it's hard to hold them. I had these constituents over here that wanted me to. No, see, if all you constituents, if all of us got on board with the compliance thing, then we actually will change the direction of our government. We demand compliance within the contract, within each state, and within the U.S. Constitution. There is a mechanism for change. It's called the Article 5 process. It's a beautiful thing. You want to change it? You want to make health care constitutional? You want to make abortion? Amend the Constitution. Oh, they know they can't do that. That takes 3/4 of the states to get on board with that. And that's where we were protected. The Constitution gave us all the protections we need. Now all we need to do is start demanding compliance, because the only reason we're in this mess is because they haven't been complying for almost 2 centuries. It has been that long. They've started diverging and perverting and subverting our politics, our government, and so forth. So those are the reasons why, the 3 premises that have kind of driven what I'm trying to do with this radio show. And I'm still kind of, I don't want to say I'm stalling, but I want to give you the time to understand what the heck I'm doing and give you an opportunity to speak up regarding what I thought was a very powerful State of the Union. That's all I'm going to tell you. I thought it was a very powerful State of the Union address. And so since I haven't gotten a call or I haven't seen the call, whether our phone system's working or what, I know that there's probably a lot of you that want to get through. I tell you the phone number, I'll give it to you again. 215-867-8255. That's 215-TOP, T-O-P, TALK, T-A-L-K. So if you want to call, by all means, or email me, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org, and I will share your insights. You just be, short. I know O'Reilly's pithy, but let's just be short. Tell me what you think. At the base level, it was great. You hated it, or why? And so while I wait for, information to come in, let me talk a little bit more about Section 3 of the 14th Amendment in context to the concept of treason. Why? Because we kind of have been talking about this, and we've been kind of dancing around this, and we haven't really talked about the elephant in the room. We have been under an assault by revolutionaries that are trying to overthrow our constitutional republican form of government. And this has been a long, long assault. And these are enemies. They are doing everything they can to undermine us. They have taken over our political system, at least part of it. And they are literally working to move the electorate into a position where they can discard and get rid of our constitutional republic. All the facts are there. So first, before I get there, let me read the entire Section 3 of the 14th Amendment for you, because it happens to be a mouthful. So it says, no person shall be a senator or representative in Congress or elector of president, being a electoral college and vice president, or hold any office, civil or military, under the United States or under any state, so that includes the militia, who, having previously taken an oath as a member of Congress or an officer of the United States or a member of the state legislatures or any of these other positions that they mention, or as an executive or judicial officer of any state, to support the Constitution of the United States, and have, and I'm inserting the and, but it's comma, shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same, or given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof. And what they're talking about here is having insurrection or rebellion against the Constitution, is what they mean against the same. They're talking about against the Constitution and our government, or given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof. But Congress, and I'll get into this final clause when we get back, because you can tell I'm at hard break. This, like I said, it's a mouthful, but this is something that everybody's been ignoring, and it's a great weapon that we need to use. I'll be right back. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. So, as you can tell, this is the last segment, so I'm running out of time. And that's why maybe I'm on radio, because I take a long time to get, you know, to put all these thoughts together. I try to be very clear so that by the end of the show, you have your arms around the whole point of what I'm trying to talk about. I hate to span things across multiple programs, but let me I'm digressing, so let me get back onto point. The last part of this is, but Congress may by a vote of 2/3 of each house remove such a disability. In other words, this Section 3 created a disability that the president and we the people can use against anybody seeking public office that has actually given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof, the enemies of our Constitution. People that are doing things that are deliberately out to undermine our Constitution. You don't have to try them for treason anymore. All you have to do, because the standard is set, enemies thereof, enemies of the Constitution is what that thereof is. And if you go to the Congressional Globe, they break down exactly what this section meant. And this meant that in lots of in context, they kept the Southern officers and public servants who swore to take an oath that they couldn't hold office anymore. The 14th Amendment really gave teeth to those people to say, hey, it would require 2/3 of Congress. But what they did was they gave us a weapon. It was a weapon that they used against those officers and or public servants that literally were violating what they felt was the Constitution and or the United States government and or the laws of the land. And I'm just here to tell you that we can really start, you know, leveraging Trump. Should be leveraging this. Now, I think this places many in office and serving the United States or the states or even local public servants in office in jeopardy. But for some, this may not be a 2020 vision type of clarity. So let me add a little more information. Let me give you a little bit more that might muddy the waters, but I will try to make sense of it all. The United States government recognized from the counterculture revolution of the 50s through the 70s that the oaths were insufficient. And so the United States government started getting more sophisticated about holding people accountable to not sharing classified information or sensitive government information with anybody else that, you know, didn't have the need to know. It was all based on need to know. Well, truth be told, this was an indictment on our society as to how we had become debased, where honor no longer meant anything to political operatives and to way too many people in America. Anyway, those who were granted high-level clearances and access to sensitive classified information were beginning to also have to sign. So people that were finally getting into these offices back in the 60s and so forth, this is when they started implementing what they call non-disclosure agreements and other legal documents to ensure those trusted could be held accountable after the fact. Because what do we have you on? An oath? Oh, well, you know. My opinions changed. That oath didn't have me bound to, you know, of a hard fact. People have been dodging the oath for way too long. But way back in the very beginning, in the framers' days, honor meant everything. You impugned somebody's honor, you were going to be fighting a duel that day, or if not immediately, because honor meant more to life to these people. So at the same time that they were creating these non-disclosure agreements, getting back on track, the U.S. began to tighten the accountability under the Johnson administration, and President Johnson signed into law the Freedom of Information Act. Interesting, right? So now they're going to be able to have access to information, but we're supposed to guard it. Well, in the 80s, an author named Bamford used the FOIA, the Freedom of Information Act request, to expose an intelligence agency in a book to give a historical perspective of the agency, right? Well, needless to say, even though the people were being held accountable not to release or divulge information in the process, well, the processes that were literally in place at the time were not necessarily the most sophisticated. So in responding to these Freedom of Information requests, well, how do I say they were lacking, because they actually gave away way too much information to this author so that he could write a book that was, you know, was actually not, it exposed a lot of things regarding this agency. And that wasn't very good, right? Well, so here's the irony. After the Civil War, Section 3 of the 14th Amendment was written to give power to the general government to go after those, and actually to the people, even the states. The states can utilize this as well, to go after those who deliberately tried to do harm to the United States and to our Constitution and our Republican form of government. In essence, this was an introduction to a new defined form of punishment for treason, instead of just hanging the violator and putting them into, you know, a particular court process. So now, in context to the punishment, instead of simply hanging, like I said, a person for treason, because in Article 3, or I should say, in Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, it really held them to keeping them from office. But in the Constitution, Article 3, Section 3, just ironic that they're both Section 3s of the 14th Amendment and Article 3, it defines treason as treason against the United States shall consist only in levying war against them or in adhering to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort. No person shall be convicted of treason unless the testimony of two witnesses be the same overt act or on confession in open court. Now, it kind of made a, I don't want to say a high bar for the federal court system to, you know, to convict somebody of treason. But in the states, they absolutely can use this, because anybody who's taken an oath to support and has actually given aid and comfort and or, and so this is really where we come down to how we have leverage against those who have been operatives against our constitutional republic, to actually hold them accountable and to mark them ineligible as public servants. We're not going to hang them. They're not going to go to jail. Some of them should be going to jail. Some of them should be tried for crimes. But let's get into that just in a second. So now in context to this punishment, instead of simply hanging a person for treason, because those who supported this amendment applied a softer punishment for a treasonous type of behavior, because clearly it is treason if you're doing things to destroy our government that are designed to undermine it. So in Article 3, Section 3 of the Constitution, it literally, you know, made it very specific of what we had to do. So as we move forward, you can now see that we don't have to hang people. We can just keep them out of public office so they can't damage us anymore. How good is that, right? And it requires 2/3 of Congress to lift this ban. So what's the point? Why am I bringing this up? Trump has the constitutional leverage to drain the swamp. Here it is right here. No one has ever used this, but I submit that it would go after the people in office who have been really successful in doing severe damage to our republic. And so let me start with some obvious ones in office. And let's just start at the state level, like Gavin Newsom and Jerry Brown and other state leaders who have been on record supporting and signing into law laws that gave illegals access to the electoral process, not creating any measures or procedures in keeping them from undermining, using democracy to undermine us. You can't tell me that they're supporting the Constitution when they know what they are doing. These guys should be removed from public office, and I would love to see the DOJ and or Trump actually going after these folks and saying, sorry, you can no longer, and arresting them. Any city or state public servant who has passed sanctuary laws for illegals who have chosen to invade our nation and violate our laws and then give them access to taxpayer-funded entitlements is deliberately undermining our constitutional republic. Now, I know some people would go, this is not splitting hairs. The benefits for the people in entitlements is not for, why don't we just start paying welfare out to China? Why don't we just start paying welfare directly? Why don't we just pay the world what they need to get by with? Because, you know, it's not fair that the people that can run across a border gets access to it, but we can't give it to everybody else. What's to keep people in Africa, people in South America, people in Asia, all around the world from suing us because they have, you know, they've been born in the circumstances that they just can't cross a border and gain free access to entitlements? I mean, it is that crazy. So let's start at the federal level, okay? Let's see how far and deep we can go with this, because I'm running out of time. I'm only going to do the Clintons because I will be out of time. Clinton gave away very sensitive classified information to the Chinese. He also supported this in getting this into the Korean. And if you look at how China has used the technology of missile guidance from Loral, they literally have been given this away to rogue nations so that the world is far more unstable. And they're using these rogue nations and active. And what about Hillary Clinton actively emailing classified? You can't tell me that wasn't aiding and abetting our enemies, that they had access to this classified information. As you can see, I've ran out of time, so we need to divulge more into this. And I apologize for nobody getting a call or getting a call in. I will get our phone lines changed. I'm G.R. Mobley. I'm Reclaiming the Republic, and I need your help. God bless. The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our Constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review, so please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of Liberty.